What is, from your understanding, why would the administration at this point introduce the idea of potentially Tomahawk missiles?
Desperation. We got insight into the delusional state, not just of the Trump administration, but of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Department of Defense. Cy Hirsch put out an article about a week ago, essentially describing the stalemate, where the war in Ukraine is going, that he was presenting what he had heard from senior source in the Trump administration. Now, I don't know if it's a political type. My guess is, knowing Cy, he's got contacts at DOD and at CIA. And he's hearing this from them. And what they're describing is a situation that does not exist. They're describing, oh man, Russia, this is a stalemate. The war is a stalemate. And it's like, do you even understand what the term stalemate means? It implies that, oh, Russia advances 5 kilometers one day, and then the next day Ukraine advances, takes those 5 kilometers back, and they're just, it's a seesaw battle back and forth. Nobody's gaining any advantage. I mean, that's just a load of horse manure. Because what we've seen is Russia is advancing and taking 2 to 3 villages a day now. Not a month, but a day. The advances all along that front are accelerating, not decelerating. And then these sources in the administration also told Cy Hirsch, and that this is what they're telling Donald Trump, and he's repeating it. Oh, the Russian economy, man, it's, oh my God, these Ukrainian drone attacks, you just destroyed the Russian economy. Their oil, they're running out of gas. People are lining up. There's shortages everywhere. The economy's collapsing. It's just a damn lie. I've got 5 different sources in Russia. 4 of them are American expats. One's a West Point graduate. One left the U.S. Army as a major after serving for 11 years. Okay? One is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur. And one is just someone who got fed up with the decline of values in the United States and moved to Russia with his family. None of them corroborate any of this. They're going, you know, when I share with them, they're going, what are you talking about? That's crazy. So, but the fact is, you've got these people in DOD, CIA, and in the Trump administration that believe this nonsense. And so once you start from a position of false belief, it's like, if I convince you, hey, Danny, look, I've got these 2 pillows, tie them to your arms and flap real hard, and then I'm going to push you off the 30-story building and you'll land softly. Now, I know you. You're not dumb enough to believe me. But that's what's happening with the Trump administration. They're dumb enough to believe that they can put the pillows on their arms, flap them real hard, and that when they hit the ground at 32 feet per second squared after falling, you know, 200 feet, that it's going to be a soft landing. So, I mean, it's delusional.
Yeah, and there is lots of that, unfortunately. But that's not where the delusion ends. And even specifically related to this Tomahawk issue, I want to see. So you saw in that first comment there that Sergei Ryabkov initially talked about the loss of the momentum since Anchorage, but then he also turned to the issue of the Tomahawk missiles. Right. And he said, because this would require the direct participation of the United States, he said this could potentially be a new level of crisis if it actually comes to be. There has been some attempts by Western so-called experts to soft pedal that and say that's actually not the case. Here is, I think this was from earlier today, maybe it was yesterday, from Mr. Clark at Sky News, who said, actually, no, you don't need the Americans to fire those things.
It can be operated without American personnel. I mean, there might be some American personnel involved in maintenance of Tomahawks, but that can be done in Poland, even if that's required. But, I mean, Tomahawk missiles are missiles. I mean, we operate them. The United Kingdom operates them quite happily from our submarines, and we can carry them from aircraft, although, we, generally speaking, we don't, but we use them on our submarines, and they're available. It's a closed weapon system. When you've got the weapon, there it is. There's the way you program it. Now, American help in programming targeting goes on all the time, so that's no different. If Tomahawks were used by the Ukrainians, does that mean American personnel in Ukraine? No, it doesn't at all.
Yeah, sure. It doesn't mean as long as you have ballistic submarines that can fire missiles or American bombers, then yeah, sure, you wouldn't have to actually have that like the UK does. But as is pointed out here in this Business Insider article on this very topic here, they point out that it's unclear how Ukraine would launch the Tomahawks if it got them. The missiles are fired from vertical launch system cells on warships, torpedo tubes from submarines, and the ground launchers like the Army's Typhoon system. Kiev lacks all of these. So you see black and white. No, you don't have to really be an expert, but it's weird that Michael Clark would be making that claim, that he even talks about how the UK could do it without the US, right, mostly because it has those platforms. Ukraine doesn't, but then he still says, but they could do it without. What do you make of that?
Well, again, this is this is really dangerous territory. This is the first time we've heard the Russians establish a bright red line with regards to a weapon system. You know, when the United States introduced the HIMARS into theater, and again, the HIMARS require U.S. assistance as well to launch and operate. The Russians didn't say that we'll view that as crossing a line and will raise the prospect of retaliation. They didn't say that with the HIMARS. They didn't say it with the ATACMS. They haven't said it with the Storm Shadow in terms of what, you know, what the Brits have launched. And they haven't even said it with respect to Taurus, but they're now saying it with respect to the Tomahawk missile.
If you could put that headline up there, that this is from today's news, not that one, the one from the, I think it's Reuters, where they're talking about, yeah, if you use these, we'll pull it up here in a second. It's one of the Russian lawmakers says Russia will destroy the Tomahawk missiles and their launchers if the U.S. gives them to Ukraine. What that means is, because they know that they'll destroy the American military forces operating them. So first of all, let me make sure you read it that way. And second, if they do, can we stop them?
Yes, they will. No, we can't. There is a report came out 2 days ago. This one channel called Borzikman, he reported that the HIMARS battery that was destroyed on Monday, I believe, that was actually crewed by a group of Army Rangers. Now, we haven't had any independent confirmation of that. But beyond that, you had Putin say that if the United States does this, it's going to force a reevaluation and assessment in the relationship with Washington. So, and the reason is simple. These are nuclear capable weapon systems. Now, the fact is that the ground launch systems for the Tomahawk were reconfigured, you know, I understand like 15, 20 years ago, so that they could not currently, in their current condition, carry a nuke. But the Russians don't want to be in the position of having to guess, does it have a nuke or does it not? So they're going to assume, we've just got to assume that it's a nuke. Now, a lot of this may just be, irresponsible talk on the part of Washington, because they actually don't have the supplies.
Right.
I like sitting there with a stockpile of them in a warehouse and say, oh boy, we got to get rid of these or they're going to go bad. No, they'll be more often than not scrambling around looking for one. Now, the truth of the matter is, as Putin made clear at the Valdai speech, I guess it was the last Thursday or Friday, he said, you know, if they shoot them, we'll shoot them down. Well, we've got the ability. They're not as daunting, perhaps, as say the
attack. A lot older technology.
Yeah, it's about 50 years old. You know, it's almost as old as you and me. You know,
but man, I didn't know it was that old.
Yeah, but you know, the fact of the matter is, it was high speed, low drag back in the 70s, as were bell bottom jeans and disco. But the world's moved on since then.
And one of the things that worries me, Larry, is that I fear that Trump is getting bad advice and information from his key staff, whoever those people that he trusts are. And I think that that was, you can see some evidence of that in his speech that he made before the naval folks that on their 250th anniversary a couple of days ago, and on what he said when asked a question in the Oval Office recently. They said, have you made a decision on the Tomahawk thing? And he said, yeah, pretty much have. But, you know, I'd like to see what they plan on doing with it, et cetera. Yeah. Implying that he doesn't really understand the significance of it or whether they even can fire it because of those issues that I mentioned there. And then he bragged about, by the way, firing 30 Tomahawks against Iran early this year in that naval speech there, where he's talking about, yeah, and just for good measure, we, from our ballistic submarines, we launched another 30 Tomahawks. They all hit their targets, et cetera. I think he thinks that the same thing would happen here, that all anything that Ukraine fired, whether it's via us or not, would strike their targets. And I don't think he's really aware of where things are in the nature of the Russians and the U.S. actually fighting each other as opposed to Iran.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, those 30 that he fired into Iran, that's 30 fewer than the U.S. has.
And that too,
you know, and if it's anything like the production of THAADs, you know, we produce 50 THAAD missiles a year. So you think of that, you fired 30 off. Okay. 20 you've used up in one attack. You use up 2/3 of the supply for an entire year. The Tomahawk cruise missile is a weapon system designed for a world, a tactical world that no longer exists. And that's the thing that Trump and his advisors don't understand. You know, they're still living in the 20th century and not even capturing the lessons that we didn't learn. Yeah, we can beat the hell out of an army like Iraq. You know, a third-rate army with no air power and no air defense systems to speak of. Yeah, boy, we can sure kick their ass. And yeah, Panama too. Boy, we showed those Panamanians. So we're good at beating up the weak and the lame, and the infirm.
Apparently, as you pointed out many times, not so good even on the weak. Look at the Houthis. Well, how'd that work out?
Yeah, the Houthis and Taliban are sitting back. Yeah, you know. Yeah, those Americans are not quite as tough as they like to pretend. So, but again, it's divorced from this reality. So we think, well, let's just send one more weapon. And you know, you've made the point, and also with your discussions with Doug, that okay, so they launch a few Tomahawks. All that's going to do is irritate the hell out of the Russians. That's all it accomplishes. It doesn't degrade their military capability. It doesn't degrade their ability to produce weapons. It doesn't degrade their ability to provide supplies needed to fuel their industries. So it's like, what's the point? What is it that we're trying to do? And it's that lack of strategic understanding within the Trump administration. That they're only thinking tactically. They are not thinking strategically.
You know, I have some concerns, and hear me out here, that part of it may not be as much a lack of strategic understanding as it is more economic understanding about what this can mean and what the continued war means. Bear with me here for a second. Let's go to Ursula von der Leyen, because Ryabkov mentioned there at the opening that he blamed the Europeans for not coming to a peaceful settlement here. And given the facts that you've talked about many times, the actual on-the-ground realities, the balance of power, all of that, it's irrational to continue supporting a war that cannot be won, that cannot even avoid being lost. I mean, it's even stronger than that, rationally speaking. And yet, this was, I want to say it was this morning, I think it was today, Ursula von der Leyen issued this dire warning about where things are heading.
Something new and dangerous is happening in our skies. In just the past 2 weeks, MiG fighters have violated Estonia's airspace, and drones have flown over critical sites in Belgium, Poland, Romania, Denmark, and Germany. Flights have been grounded, jets scrambled, and countermeasures deployed to ensure the safety of our citizens. Make no mistake, this is part of a worrisome pattern of growing threats. Across our union, undersea cables have been cut, airports and logistic hubs paralyzed by cyber attacks, and elections targeted by malign influence campaign. These incidents are calculated to linger in the twilight of deniability. This is not random harassment. It is a coherent and escalating campaign to unsettle our citizens, test our resolve, divide our union, and weaken our support for Ukraine. And it is time to call it by its name. This is hybrid warfare.
So there you have it. We are at warfare. And there's a couple of things I want to point out here, but the operative one is that she listed off this whole laundry list of things, giving the strong implication that they're coming out of nowhere. There's no reason for Russia to be doing this. It certainly can't have anything to do with our actions, and it's a consequence and a reaction to our actions. But no, this is just that Russia's doing all these things devoid of any context, meaning we need to be ready for war. That's the message here. What do you say?
Well, they need to be ready for war, but they're incapable of making those preparations. You know, if you go out and say, we're going to do a random survey, we're going to give people the opportunity. You can have dinner with Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, or François Emmanuel Macron, the President of France, or Friedrich Merz, the President of Germany, or you can have a colonoscopy. Most people would choose the colonoscopy, okay? It's that bad. You've got a complete separation, a widening gulf between the leadership of these NATO, many of these NATO countries. And I put Ursula Fond of Lying. I don't call her von der Leyen. It's Fond of Lying, which she did an excellent job right there. But she's in with that class, whereas the majority of the populations are going, we're not going to war. Wait a second. No. We're not doing that. So it's going to erupt at some point, that fissure. And her litany of all of these, quote, drone attacks. You saw the other day, they finally fessed up that one of these incursions were 10 balloons that had cigarettes attached to them. So they were smuggling cigarettes with weather balloons.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, which made me then in my mind, I started hearing the song by Nena. You remember the
99 Luftballons?
The 99 Luftballons, yeah. You know. And that should be like the theme song for what's going on right now. Because actually that song and the lyrics of it dealt with this sort of European madness with respect to war. So, yeah, okay, Europe, arm up, baby. Let's do it. Oh, except the president now of Slovakia, the president of the Czech Republic, President Orban of Hungary, they're saying, nah, we're not going along. You guys go have fun.
Yeah,
we're not playing.
We're going to get to that, actually, to many of those, what you just mentioned here. But let me show you first that it's not just the Europeans, but there are still these neocon war lusters in the United States that seem to be behind this. As today's Washington Post had George Will, who's saying that, yeah, look, we are at war. He wrote today, this is just today, Russia has launched this torrent of aggressions. He mentioned some of the same things that Ursula von der Leyen did. The aggressed against still calls this hybrid or gray zone war. Erase the adjectives. This is war. He didn't even say gray zone war. He didn't even say cyber war. He said war. What if Russia's winning in Ukraine were only the beginning of the enfeeblement of the United States? Putin strolled down Donald Trump's red carpet in Alaska and then took none of the steps regarding Ukraine that Trump said were necessary for Russia to avoid very severe consequences. Instead, Putin intensified his Russian attacks. Now, this completely is oblivious to the fact that Russia came in at Alaska and said, we would love to solve this through diplomatic means. Here are the conditions, however, which were very draconian for the Ukraine side, but they're very open and honest about it publicly as well as privately. And we didn't want to go down that path. So, but the claim is that Russia just came in and just didn't listen to Trump. Like Trump was the lecturer and right. or the daddy, and here's the, you know, the recalcitrant son or something, and he didn't obey. So what does that leave except for war? Where does that lead, though?
Well, for starters, with George Will, I wasn't even aware that he was still alive. I mean, he's a bow tie wearing buffoon. Obviously, he tied his bow tie too tight. It cut off the blood flow of oxygen to his brain for him to write something so ridiculous. You know, I dealt with the guy several, you know, got 30 plus years ago. The arrogance is superseded only by the ignorance in that kind of statement. The provocation of the West in attacking Russia, you know, it extends back now 35 years, going with the collapse of the Soviet Union and the emergence of this new government. There were repeated efforts by Russia to work with, cooperate with, be included as part of the West. But the West is insistent upon destroying Russia for two reasons. One, to get access and control of all the abundant natural resources that Russia has. And number two, to use it as a springboard to go against China. That's it. So we don't give a damn about the Russian people. And so, you know, here's what Will trying to, you know, talk about the enfeeblement of the United States. Hey, George, newsflash, we're already there. We cannot produce enough artillery shells to keep the Ukrainian army supplied for 1 month, much less a year. How about drones? How are we doing on that front? Well, not too good, because it seems that we got this little trade problem with China, and they control many of the key components that we need for making the drones. So we're in the process of the United States losing its role as the dominant world leader, both economically. We lost that role militarily. We still, you know, have Trump pretending that we're this dominant military power. And, you know, as you correctly noted, we couldn't handle the Taliban and the Houthis. So
the Houthis.
Yeah.
Well, you say that that's the only thing, you know, it's that simple. It's just that China, it's a little bit more complicated and in some ways weird, because you correctly point out, we are not the arsenal of democracy like we, you know, were in World War II and claim to still be. There's no truth to that, because we can't physically produce this stuff. You correctly right. identified that one category. You could add other things like interceptor missiles, offensive long range missiles. I mean, we can't produce a shred of what we need, a fraction of it. But at the same time, we are focused on, and one of the reasons why I think that we're behind this and okay with not having this war come to an end, because it keeps the trough open for the defense industrial base.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a couple of recent articles that really put the graphic number on it. First of all, in terms of the war in the Middle East, since October 7, 2023, it's been a big boon for the defense industrial base here. We've spent a total of $21 billion to allow Israel to continue fighting for now 2 years. And then you speak about this Yemen operation, the one we did in Iran, and some of the other areas that we have spent of our own, add another 10 to $12 billion, and you're talking about nearly $33 billion that we have spent on that alone. And, of course, all that has to go into making new missiles, et cetera. That's in the Middle East. Now then we jump to the Russia-Ukraine war. So we're going back 3.5 years. Trump often uses this weird number, $350 billion the U.S. has spent. There's no rationale. That's not true at all. The real number, though, is huge. It's $187 billion, and it goes into all these different categories of things that we have spent on there. So there is a lot of money, especially the biggest majority of that is $126 billion in military operations and funds and everything else, a majority of which goes back to the U.S. defense industrial base. So everywhere you look, that's going there. Now then you look overall, and Gary put that third one up there, the profits of war, the top beneficiaries from 2020 through 2024, 54% of $4.4 trillion went to military contractors. War is good business for the contractors. It doesn't matter that they're not producing the stuff we would actually need if we have to fight a war. It only matters that the bottom line, which they, of course, richly reward all of those members of Congress and any other politicians or any of these other former four-star generals that we, you know, warn you about all the time, that's where a lot of this money goes. And then there you have it. So that's it's so short-sighted.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, it's to sing the song briefly from Cabaret, money makes the world go round. The world go round. I lived next door when I was living in Bethesda to the largest defense lobbyist in D.C. Good guy. I mean, he was a good neighbor. He was completely incapable of fixing anything around his house. I mean, when he'd get a clogged toilet, his wife would call me up to come over and unclog the toilet, okay? It was that bad. He didn't even know how to jumpstart a car. But he did know how to sign up General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, all the Raytheon, and he knew how to hold fundraisers for members of Congress and to hold these fundraisers to give those members of Congress a nice big fat check. And then when he would call those members of Congress, they'd pick the phone up and say, "Hey there, how are you doing? And what do you need?" And he'd tell them what he needs, tell them what his customers need. And that member of Congress, happy to do it. He didn't do it for all 535. No, no, no. You go for the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. Yep. You bipartisan, man. Do the Democrats and the Republicans. Don't just go on one side. You got to play both sides of the aisle on this. And you do it for the Armed Services Committee. And you do it for the you find those key committees that are going to be the ones who can actually sign the checks, appropriate the money, whatever. And that's been the Washington business. It really came into full blow, you know, its full glory about 35 years ago under Bill Clinton. That's when this shift from the government doing itself internally to farming it out to contractors started. And it accelerated under George W. Bush, continued under Barack Obama, has continued under Donald Trump, you know, and the money, you can see the tangible evidence. Well, you know, you live there in Northern Virginia. You remember all the Lamborghini and Ferrari dealerships there were 35 years ago? No, because they didn't exist. They're there now.
They sure are there now.
Bentley and Rolls Royce have dealerships. Straight up. Good God. You know, it's just so the money has, it is nothing but a house of ill repute anymore in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and again, the double perverse, not only are we funneling away literally hundreds of billions of dollars to support two wars that are not in our national interest, that our security is not threatened. There's $200 billion. And look, I mean, you could just not get further into debt by not going down that path. You could use it on things that benefit Americans. And there's a whole laundry list of things that could have done that we, you know, we tell people, well, we can't do this. We don't have money. We can't do that. We can't help you out, but we are sending this stuff over here in places that are not where our security isn't threatened, but it's making a whole lot of money for a very tiny fraction of a minority of the uber rich, et cetera.
Correct.
And yet it's not producing national security for us. To the contrary, even though we're spending a lot of this money, our stocks of the weapons that we would need, should we unexpectedly get into a war with China or unexpectedly get into a war with Russia, if we should stumble into either one of those, whether intentionally or a Pearl Harbor kind of thing somewhere else, we don't have the stocks of weapons because we keep giving them away faster than we can generate it with our very limited defense industrial base. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, again, the weapon system should be designed from a strategic point of view. In other words, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? And then you come up with the tactics. What do we need? What concrete steps do we need, or what things do we need in order to achieve this objective? So the example is, now we've created an air defense system that was built around an idea that the threat that we'd be facing was like one inbound plane or one inbound missile. And so, okay, so it's going to cost us $7 million per Patriot missile. I'm not talking about the whole unit. I mean, the whole unit, you're up into, you know, $30 million probably. But each missile that you fire, it's $7 million if it's the S-3. Well, and then normally it was designed, okay, we're going to fire these two at this, you know, $60 million aircraft that's coming in. Okay, that makes, you could say, yeah, we'll spend $14 million to shoot down something that's $60 million. But now we're using it to shoot down $20,000, $50,000 drones that all of a sudden, you know, we're using, spending $14 million to defeat a $50,000 cost. And Russia can pump those out every day. You know, when they're firing 600 of those, and you figure, okay, we got to fire two for every one of those. That would be 1,200, except Lockheed Martin only makes 550, maybe 700 a year. Whoops. Right away, in one day, with one launch, you can completely wipe out the, you know, 2 years of production by the U.S. producer. And it's not confined just to the Patriot missile. We find the same thing with the THAAD system, the Terminal High Altitude Air Defense System. We find the same thing with the M1 Abrams tanks. We don't even build those new anymore. We take existing ones and refurbish them. Oh, yeah, but it takes us 18 months to refurbish. I mean, good God, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like a real estate project in Florida. You know, they're notorious down here for starting and not getting them finished. Mm-hmm. So you can't point to a single weapons class, you know, like aircraft carriers. Yeah, man, we can build one in, three, 4 years. Icebreakers, we're 2 to 3 years out from there. F-35 jets. Oh, those are 18 months to 24 months. Across the board, it's as if they believe that we're in some ancient time where we got all the time in the world to worry about this. Meanwhile, what we've seen take place on the ground in Ukraine is extremely rapid transformation. 3 years ago when this war started, nobody was thinking about the drones becoming the dominant technology on the battlefield. Now you can't imagine the battlefield without the drones. And there's not just one type of drone. There are multiple types of drones. Everything from those that do intelligence and reconnaissance, those that are actually interceptors of other drones, those that are capable of carrying out attacks, suicide drones, and those that can actually drop explosives and go back and reload and come back again. And you know, here's the United States trying to figure out, we got to build some more drones, but you know, China's not happy with us right now. And they control all the key components. And I know what we'll do. We're going to piss on the Chinese some more. That'll teach them.
That'll help them. Yeah.